taking it down.
Hello, welcome to Taking It Down. And if you know why tennis goes from 15 to 30, then to 40 and not 45, message us. We do not own Google or anything like that.
But we love the U.S. Open.
Welcome to Taking It Down. We are the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Podcast. I am your host today on the show. We won't talk tennis that I know of, but we are talking about recent, mainly online, conversations that are going on around Apple TV's Ted Lasso, as well as the most recent episode of Ted Lasso. We'll also talk about Pen 15 on Hulu, and a little on the return of the FX/Hulu show. You can find it either of those places. Actually, it's FXX. What We Do in the Shadows. We'll talk about it after the break. Here with me today, you've already heard from Adam. He's here, and Donovan's here too.
Great to be here, Blaine. Thanks for having me on the show.
Personally, yep. I would love to talk about tennis, but I know that's not going to fly with the group here. But it's been a very great midway point here of the U.S. Open. Really, really good stuff.
Instead, we're going to talk about COVID.
Sure.
The good news is that there's like the tiniest fraction of an amount of good news. Alabama is now the second worst in the country on vaccination rates. So big ups to Mississippi for still not doing shit. It's real possible we could make gains on Wyoming. Fingers crossed. Wyoming, we're looking at you.
The waiting game. A war of attrition.
What you're saying is that enough people will die off to make our vaccination rate. Is that in the algorithm?
Yes.
Fair.
That's what I'm saying.
It's
not happy. Well, we don't want to win this game.
But it's not happy, but we're going to win.
That's most of Alabama, unless you're Alabama football. So how much football did you guys consume opening weekend, week one, the official opening weekend, not week zero?
Well, started out at 12 and watched until I fell asleep during the Georgia-Clemson game because it wasn't super exciting.
Just football right after another? No breaks, yeah. Or anything?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, I did some dishes.
That's very kind of you.
But I could hear the TV. Actually watched, we started out with the Penn State-Wisconsin game, which ended up being way more fun than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because both teams couldn't make anything happen, and mm-hmm. then sporadically things did start happening, which was kind of intriguing.
I love how Gus Johnson and the other announcer were trying to sell the game over and over and over as being just this massive defensive battle, when in all actuality it looked as though both offenses were woefully unprepared.
If the offenses could like keep their hands on the ball and stop dropping it would have been a very different game. But I will say Penn State's defense especially kept them in the game when their offense looked absolutely clueless at some points out there. They made a couple things happen. It was kind of fun.
So you started and finished your day with a Big Ten struggle. You said you fell asleep, yes, watching Georgia-Clemson.
I fell asleep to Georgia-Clemson after Georgia had basically scored about all the points they were going to score.
Which was three on offense, that is.
Gus Johnson and his compatriots trying to sell boring games. Like, football is at the sweet spot where it's like the games are so long that they know they have to keep people, they have to give them something, some like hope on the horizon, some like meaning to the total meaninglessness of like a just third quarter in the doldrums. Like the only other thing that lasts as long as football is baseball, and the announcers there just like have already accepted who the audience is, that this is not exciting at all. They're not trying at all.
Baseball announcers are talking about dentist visits, paying their house insurance.
They're having a full interview during the game.
Yeah, they're just riffing.
Most other sports are, you don't have to sell the game while it's happening. I think that's so funny when that takes place. And it seems to take place a lot with those noon kickoffs that Donovan so loves.
the noon kickoff is really, if you want to just watch two clueless kids hammering away at each other, my friend, turn on your TV at 12 p.m. That's where it is.
I know we did the football preview show last week, and I got a bit hipper to how good the slate of games was on week one. But like some of these sleeper games, like why is Wisconsin playing Penn State this early? There's so many like I mean, the Big Ten conference games, it was just odd to see.
It was, Big Ten had a weird spate of like actually kind of great games, and then games where I picked Indiana to win. So there were also those games.
Yeah, you were sold on Indiana last week.
Indiana could. I've still got a little faith in them. Boy, speaking of things we were all sold on last week, how about those Tar Heels, huh?
Oof.
Yeah, they bit the dust.
Rough.
I'm trying to tee Donovan up for...
What do you want? What are you trying to get me to say here?
I'm just trying to tee you up for Rutgers beating the holy hell out of Temple. I mean, yeah. To beat the shit out of them.
Rutgers, and my Grammy always used to say about Temple, you can go to Temple or you can go to a good school. So I kind of think of that every time.
Did Grammy time. Actually say that?
Oh, yeah. That's something she really said.
Wow. Why did she have such strong opinions on Temple?
Because she's from Pennsylvania, and I forget what it was.
What are you? Good. I mean, Beth, your wife is also from Pennsylvania. What is it with you in this orbit of the square state or the rectangle state?
I think you mean America's belt buckle there?
Yeah.
Barely holding up America's Maryland.
Where did your family fall on the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia divide?
So they would have been more on the Pittsburgh side.
Beth is strongly mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, right?
Beth is strongly... Now, Beth originally grew up in Eagles territory. So she has, like... And her parents would bring them to Phillies games all the time. So she has, like, just horror... Like, every once in a while, like, a repressed memory comes up. And she's like, oh, and I saw a guy almost get killed. Like, she has a memory of, like, a guy running out on the field and security punching him in the back of the head as hard as he can. And this guy just going limp. And being carried off the field, or like, you know, the batteries being thrown, or fans making each other throw it up on each other.
And that was just her dad, so.
and then she moved over to the Pittsburgh side of things, so she's solidly Pittsburgh now.
I just love that state in particular is like, people who love Pittsburgh are like, no, Philly's a shithole. Don't ever go to Philly. You'll get killed. And people from Philly just hate Pittsburgh in the same way. It's such a funny... Mm-hmm. Funny thing. I mean, if we're talking about, by the way, before we move on from college football, I feel like since we opened up the group, the Pick'em group, to the Alabama Take family, should we not talk about who won this first week?
I don't think they care.
I mean, care. It was me. I came in first place. Tied.
Oh, was it so much? Yeah.
Tied with 87 Jetta and The Process. We all had 42 points. So,
yeah, I don't know who The Process is. And shame on ESPN, they've changed their format. I didn't play last year, but they've changed their the way it looks in the app and maybe on the desktop, because you used to be able to not only see what everybody picked, but you could see kind of like the points that they've put on it. It's, I don't know, it's just a little harder to figure out. And you could also see what their email address or something like that was. Or maybe it wasn't email address. It was something where you could identify who it was, or it gave you a bigger hint on who was who. Now you just have the names to go by, and if they don't name themselves something I recognize, I don't know who it is. So if you are The Process, then let me know and get your proper recognition for third place this week.
Say, what's the prize?
The prize is a top two get a Alabama Take T-shirt this year.
Oh, damn,
I'm well on my way.
It's a long season.
I'll segue again here. It got just cool enough the other night that Natalie wore her done up real good Alabama Take hoodie and got a lot of compliments.
Oh, that's really? That's awesome.
That's a smart hoodie. The blue and the yellow and the red looks great.
Yeah, I think it looks good. It's got a Superman feel to it a little, but it looks good.
Yeah,
get your own at our online T-shirt store. I think you can get almost anything, mugs, T-shirts, but you can do that at click on the alabamatake.com and shop. Or if you're in Instagram, we've got like a link tree thing that's real easy to look at our links there. You know, notably absent on our rundown of topics earlier was the Marvel movie Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, whatever it is. And I know we talked about this last week, how we were just utterly unenthused over this film, and there's no sense in beating a dead horse, but I just had two things I thought of this week, going into the weekend and seeing that I'm actually just don't care about this movie. It's that I predict So we record on Sunday. I predict tomorrow or later today, when they start thinking about box office returns, this is going to be Marvel's worst performing movie ever. I'm real curious if that'll force them to do any rethinking about the next release. And second thing I wanted to say is that they dropped the ball so badly by not releasing this on Disney Plus and not recognizing that a large portion of the country is still not going to go to the theater because of the Delta surge. Do y'all have any further comments from last week other than you're not going to go see it?
Did this movie feel weirdly under-advertised to you? I feel like I saw Black Widow. Really? I feel like I just recently started seeing trailers for it, but I saw Black Widow stuff from...
No, Adam talked about how heavily advertised it was last week. He was talking about that.
Well, it was in a couple... When I went to see the two movies that I went to see in the gap between getting the vaccine and Delta appearing, it was advertised in both of those spots. I will say, to the box office thing, I looked this up after looking at the notes. Apparently, it is has had the third best open during the pandemic, and it will become the best opening weekend in Labor Day history, apparently. No, studios avoid Labor Day, but it has done better than I expected it to. And I'm kind of wondering, just for example, have you guys ever heard of the movie The Great Wall? Have we ever talked about this?
This is the one that Matt Damon was in?
Yeah, which I knew nothing about, but was made almost explicitly for, the Chinese market. Or, I mean, you have to wonder what kind of international numbers. I know this new Marvel movie opened number one in the UK this weekend, and you have to wonder what kind of numbers it'll bring in internationally. That make it seem like a smaller deal here when they're thinking of a global brand. I'm just curious about that. I don't have an answer.
Yeah, I was real shocked that they opened it on college football weekend, but now that you mention it, that is like a blip in their radar.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If anything. Oh, they don't.
It's not. It's not it. I mean, even if you run the numbers of what the NFL does compared to college football, it dwarfs it. So I don't think it would really trouble them.
As with all things Marvel, it'll be interesting to see what the Chinese box office is, because I know that they really look for that.
I wonder how quickly this comes up on Disney Plus too.
That's what we had the conversation
usual, right?
Like, it's gonna rain here later today. It's gonna, a lazy Sunday afternoon before Labor Day. And Natalie said, "Do you have any interest in going to that movie?" And I said, "I would watch it. TV here, Disney Plus for sure. I would gamble the time, but I'm not sure about gambling the ticket price and a theater trip and all of that."
Yep. Same here, man. Maybe it'll be on Disney Plus in like a month or so, or before whatever the next thing would be that falls in line with. I hope. I'd give it a shot on TV, but nah. Speaking of what we're giving shots on TV, I want to talk about Ted Lasso over on Apple TV.
More like taking shots, am I right?
Some people are. Yeah, we can talk specifics of these last couple of weeks of episodes, but I want to talk to you too about the discourse surrounding Ted Lasso these days. And here, as with almost anything that's enjoyed or thought of in a good light, there's a backlash, and there's always a backlash to the backlash. All that's inevitable online, and it's also exhausting sometimes. But I'll say that part of the backlash for Ted Lasso this season, the part that I find well-founded, is that the first half of this second season isn't as good as the previous. And I'm on board with that criticism. That's fine, and I agree with it. But the larger discourse with Ted Lasso is that he's supposed to be this model for good male behavior, and that the show is some sort of didactic piece. I'm taking a huge chunk of what I'm referencing today from this Jack Hamilton piece, who wrote it for Gawker. Gawker, who no one was begging to return and suddenly returned with this shit. And he even said that the show is not funny. He said that. And I think he even tweeted that he's real skeptical of, quote, comedy that's not funny.
It's the show for people who hate to laugh, right? I think that was one of his things.
Something real snarky like that. Anyway, that's just not true. It's not unfunny. So I'm going to start there. So what makes the show funny to y'all? Because I think the three of us are in the camp that the show's funny. So even this second season, I think, has been funny.
Agreed.
It's been more intermittently. I think the second season has been at least for me, more like, this is a situation that I understand is humorous, although I'm not laughing out loud. Mm-hmm. Although I'll usually laugh out loud once or twice every episode.
I'll point to the Chuck E. Cheese in Britain as the one of the best jokes of the whole series ever, as well as, now I know the Jack Hamilton guy wasn't commenting on the most recent episode. I don't think he had that watched, or I don't know, maybe he does, he gets screeners, but Rory's reactions to asking if they were talking about him when he'd come to the ring, I mean, that's good. You know, plenty of other examples from season two alone, but those are two.
I'd say I'm also a fan of the thing that turns Keeley on the most being the video of Roy retiring.
Crying.
Crying while he's retiring.
I mean, anything Roy. So, yeah. Anybody, if you can watch every scene that he's in the second season and say this is not a genuine comedy, then you're full of it. There's no way. You're choosing to not find him funny.
And I wonder, too, and I could be completely wrong about this and seeing things where there are nothing, where there is nothing, but I wonder if some of the maybe tonal shift is, I think Jason Sudeikis has been playing Ted like a guy kind of who's about to have a breakdown. He mm-hmm. looks like he's about to have a break. It's been getting hard to, and it's kind of making him not funny because it's obvious that he's just doing his quirky little things. Because he's trying to stave off something bigger. And I mean, that's going to contribute to the show not being as funny. Or it doesn't read as funny to me. It reads more like, oh man, this guy really does need to go to therapy. But, yeah, I don't.
I mean, the story, I think if we had to watch season one weekly, I didn't do a weekly watch. I jumped in late and was able to binge a lot of it. I'm not sure that it holds up. With the bar that was set at the end of the first season, it seems very unfair to compare something that's going to have, I think, 12 episodes total. We're just getting to, like, possibly not even into Act 2 yet. You know, they seem to be setting the stage for that with Nate's kind of fall from grace and Ted finally accepting or beginning to accept help this week. I can't agree that it's not as good before the season's over to me, because there were softball episodes in season one, I thought, and so I can't judge. You know, just there are things I'm not crazy about, like the team all going crazy and hugging each other all the time, and the Christmas episode with the it went a little too far at times, but I don't know. It seemed like you can't help but think, oh, they read the press about how this is making people feel connected and grounded and part of a community that's filled with empathy and blah, 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 and kind of like leaned into some of those things. But I mean, I'm kind of with Donovan that there's a front happening that is probably going to get undercut. They kept bringing up Empire Strikes Back in the press junkets for this. And so I don't think that this season's going to end in a happy place. I think they're setting up a fall in a lot of different ways. Certainly for Nate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Definitely seems that way. Well, this Jack Hamilton guy, he, speaking of reading the press, it felt like he read the press and decided, well, what's going to get my article clicked is going against exactly what everyone's thinking right now.
A contrarian
was
take.
Was thinking 6 months. Yeah. Yeah, just a contrarian take is what it is, and 100%. He does make some, but he ramped in that contrarian take is some good points, like I was talking about earlier. The one, you know, I'm not going to concede nothing. I'm going to give it to this asshole. He makes a good point that Christmas Baby, Please Come Home was a step too far. And I agree. It was, that's not only is it overused, but he was talking about what a personal connection he has to the song and how it's actually a sad song, but they're using it in a happy way. And, you know,
were they using it in a happy way? I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I
didn't really like the Christmas episode as much. I will say that.
I deeply enjoyed parts of the Christmas episode, but to say that that's a purely happy use of that song when she's saved Ted from drinking himself into oblivion because he's an ocean away from his kid is kind of, that's a one-dimensional take on that, I think. Because it is, I mean, that's why that's probably my favorite, easily my favorite Christmas song. Is it's not happy. it's got that specter, seems lovey-dovey, but is actually a total bummer thing going on.
Do you, either of you have a response to it trying to be didactic. You know, this is a show built for men who don't know how to treat other people, and they're supposed to learn or apply something.
I just kind of think that doesn't make any sense. I mean, have you ever seen something didactic? If you have, turn on PBS or whatever. Like, it's not fun or funny. So, I mean, usually, right? So I just think that doesn't super duper click with me. That this is, I don't know. didactic piece.
Yeah, his piece even seems, there are moments of it, and he probably didn't mean this, it might be my reading, but he even seems to dismiss good characters, good, well-meaning characters. And this is just classic internet response behavior where no one wins. You can't like this and because someone's going to come along and tell you you're wrong. Antiheroes were piling high in television, and maybe they were setting bad examples to people who take their life advice from Walter White or Tony Soprano. And then you get a Ted Lasso, but, you know, he's nice, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah. I mean, the amount of people who just totally whiffed on the point of Breaking Bad is always shocking.
Something in this Jack Hamilton piece. He doesn't mention Walter White, I don't think.
Right. But just culturally, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, Ted is about to have, he's going through a downfall in a lot of ways, or questioning his coping mechanisms or whatever it is. I don't know. That it seems, I don't see it as being morally high-handed and trying to show other people the light, you know?
Now, do I believe people can take this as, or are taking it as a didactic piece? Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. But it's not in the intent.
Well, I wonder if there's something about how it's probably more sincere and more on the side of its characters than a lot of shows, that at least that I typically watch. So I wonder if there's just something about that kind of lends itself to thinking that, like, this is instructional TV. Instead of what you have to do watching The Sopranos or Breaking Bad or Arrested Development, where you have to understand that what's being depicted is not necessarily being lauded. Does that make any sense? You're making faces.
I'm just tracking.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's something in the, I think I saw in the sincerity of it. I saw something in the New York Times that was about how the mode of 2000s TV was primarily ironic, in the sense that you have to understand that you have to be at a different, what's being seen is and depicted is not necessarily, it's not necessarily good, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, so you have to be kind of have that frisson, whereas maybe Ted Lasso is something that's more, that the primary mode isn't ironic, it's more sincere. And that got me thinking about, is it just easy to make a different kind of mistake with something that does seem more sincere?
Yeah.
It's also, so the show was conceived and written and executed in a pre-pandemic world that ended up being, I mean, I think there's pieces of great art that are made before an event happens and then end up becoming a bomb in a sort for whatever malaise comes about. And it certainly was that, but it didn't set out to be that. It didn't, you know, I just wonder how, I think people would have been attracted to it in much the same way if we hadn't all been sitting at home just living in daily dread when it first popped up. But to combine the usual set of expectations on the outside from us as viewers and for critics for a second work, you know, to combine that with, I mean, who knows what the writer's room was like for them to see how successful it was and to see how it was talked about and to have to navigate all of that with a story that they already had in mind. That's a tall task. And I think they're doing a good job with it, but there's so many, that's always hard, but then for it to be, for, you know, to have become the thing that it did is just an intense experience for a creator.
That's a good point, because you have to, what you just said, Adam, because you have to think that they weren't, that this spoke to us, but they didn't necessarily write it to speak to us. And right. Maybe some of us want it to speak to us in a way that isn't baked into the DNA of the show because that's not what they're doing.
One last note before we move on is that the playlist Roy made for Keeley is actually on Apple Music, apparently. Which
I'd give it a try.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, okay. We'll move on. Okay, let's dive into the Pen 15 animated special. I think it's a special because it's only they're only doing the one episode, I think, to kind of wrap that part of the season. Anyway, it's now on Hulu. Still stars Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle. It's called Jacuzzi. And they're in that season that they're trying to put a bow on is was muddled by COVID, and now the two leads being pregnant at the same time. So they're both actually pregnant, and that's why they went the animated route. And both Donovan and I have seen it. So let's get some thoughts on. I was really worried that the animation factor would hinder the jokes, which to me hinge on facial expressions,
especially with Maya,
and where her these expressions of silliness and stupidity at times, and that did happen with a couple of the scenes with the animated, but I really thought it was good.
I thought it was pretty good too, and it didn't feel like a super weird departure because this show has never been like slavishly devoted to realism, you know.
Exactly.
And it turns out that the leads are actually pretty good voice actors too. There's a lot of personality that's shown through. Like the I'll point especially to what was making me laugh was Maya's delivery of we were holding the bottle for the little kids because we didn't want them, like when she's going through the story that she's concocted of why Anna's drunk.
Yeah.
Just the way that she's really pretty good. I was really curious how you were going to take this one, Blaine, just because I know you're usually not crazy about animation. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you really are able to say, like, I've seen this live action and I've seen it animated. You actually have that comparison.
It's kind of a 90s style of animation they're working with. It was a bit familiar, but you know, it did hinder some of the facial expressions, but what it did is it allowed the show to turn this motif that they've used from episode one, that we all feel ugly, which is so exaggerated in middle school. And then you get to exaggerate it with the animation. So we get a sense of how they think of themselves with Anna with the big nose and Maya with the huge round face. And another thing it did great is it was able to tap into that dangerous feeling of a big city when you're young. If they would have shot that in a real city, there wouldn't have been much of it that felt particularly weird or dangerous, but allowing them to animate it where no one was on the street with them and almost no street lights were lit, you know, so they took advantage of it quite well. So I thought it was pretty skillfully done.
I thought the animation helped it too, because it kind of, the whole episode felt like it was in a weird in-between place, which I think it should feel that way, because like they're on vacation, right? They're down in Florida where they're not from. They're mm-hmm. with they're with Anna's dad, who's you know, in a weird place with Anna's mom. It just kind of felt, I didn't always love the animation, but when it worked, I felt it did a good job of that. Or even like, there was something about, I really liked the way the club, the way the animation worked when they were in the club. Just because it made it seem extra sad and desolate with just a few kids standing around.
Yes,
so there
it
were
did.
there were moments where it really worked.
Yeah, and the bit with Maya dancing on the club's floor was still a riot. Despite
Maya doing the worm was.
She says, "Anna, come over. I'm dancing." She's just doing the worm.
It was a highlight of the episode.
Maya dancing in any episode is a highlight. So yeah, it worked despite its couple of failures, but that universal feeling of being ugly continuing with that underlying sadness that's also there in the show. I still had that. I know a few people had problems with the episode, but I found it actually endearing, especially the final scene, I guess you would call it, the final bit where they leave Florida for their holiday or vacation. I found it Got a little heartbreaking.
Did you, would you want to see more?
I wouldn't mind seeing a couple. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more, but I wouldn't want them to shift to that completely.
Yeah,
every now and again, that would be kind of fun.
I think I feel the same way. Just because, you know, they've always, like, they've never been super duper real. There's an element of real, there's emotional realism there, but they've never been tied to realism. And it was kind of fun to see what they could do, what they felt like they could do with the animation. And I'd like to see what they can do if they don't feel forced into it, too.
Yeah, for sure. It could be good if they do that every now and again. All right, well, let's take our break. And on the other side, we're talking what we do in the shadows, for sure. All right, thanks for checking in with us at Taking It Down. On the website, thealabamatake.com, you can find T.D. Wood's coverage of the challenge every Thursday around lunch or so. You can use both his and my best bets to make yourself some big money this college football season. Those are posted for you every Friday evening. Have a peek before Saturday's college football games. And don't forget that every Friday morning, there are new episodes for the online talk show, Short Takes. Coming this Friday, we've got entrepreneur Sophie Jones from Tuscaloosa on the show. Subscribe to this podcast. Review us. Let a friend know. We'll be with you each and every Tuesday morning, bright and early. Also, take a second to subscribe to our YouTube channel for Short Takes. And occasionally, we dig into the vaults and post an Alabama Take episode from way back when. And do I have some horrible news for everyone? It's September. That means the podcast This Song Sucks is so close to coming back with its second season. I encourage you to go back and listen to that first season if you haven't already. Subscribe to them so you don't miss that debut of season two. Let's get back into our weekly Taking It Down show. A real quick question. This is for Adam. Have you followed up on any more episodes of Mr. Corman on Apple TV Plus?
I have not returned to it. They got to be stacking up now. Have you followed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How's it holding up?
Yeah, it's good. I'll be interested to hear what you think of the show as you go forward. I think it aired its sixth episode this past Friday, and I found it quite adept and fluctuating between really excellent to pretty good for the most part. It sort of fluctuates between those two grades.
Does Keeley give it a lift?
That was the most recent episode where she came on, and I'll just say it was not as great, but it was still good. I'm digging it a lot. It's doing some things like Pen 15 kind of does, where it is, aspects of it are absolutely not grounded in reality, but the emotional weight of it is very realistic. So I like it.
I need to give it a whirl because there is just a open space in my life and my heart now that 100 Foot Wave is over, and to a lesser degree White Lotus, but. Yeah, multiple times this week I thought, man, I wish I had one of those to watch, a new one. So yeah, I'll go see what's happening.
I'm seeing Mr. Corman really be a dividing line. People love it or hate it, and I am really digging it.
Much like White Lotus, as time has gone on, it seemed like people.
Oh, really?
Were all about it, and I keep seeing people say how horrible it was now, which I completely disagree with. But
no, it was good.
It was great.
You know, it's not every week that we covered the challenge on here, because we get to share our thoughts. TD allows us into that sphere on Thursdays around lunch. We get to add some thoughts on those columns. But Adam, this is a week that's just too dramatic to let slide by. And that may be the case this season.
The other reason we can't talk about it is it just derails whatever's going on otherwise in this episode, because we'll get on
it's true. But we only have a little bit of time needed for what we do in the shadows, because it only has two episodes aired so far. So we can get into the challenge some. So I'll just toss you some things I really want you to talk about, because none of this is stuff we were able to unpack in this week's column. So
okay.
Ashley M. Millionaire
Ashley
Mitchell.
Millionaire Mitchell. Okay. That's it. Just her name. No question attached to it.
I can specify. did Nelson deserve her retribution?
No, I don't think so. There seems to, but I mean, I don't know. There may be a fundamental misunderstanding about what sort of relationship they were in, which is I want to say it's not my business, but they kind of made it my business that was my third by going question. On this show.
Do you care? I guess is my third question.
I don't. I don't really care, and it's odd to see her. You never know with the seasoned vets if they're actually worked up about something or if they're playing it for effect, mm-hmm. either for their fellow competitors to try to, you know, sow some seeds that aren't true that they can kind of take advantage of later, or if they're trying to keep their spot on the show by having drama. Who knows? I did think it was funny mm-hmm. that, and we got a little bit into this in TD's column, which has been super fun this year. I love the question format for this season. Mm-hmm. I thought we've had some good ones. But it's kind of the same thing as Devin and Kyle, you know? Like, it seemed to be like a strong reaction to something that's not that big of a deal.
Which the Nilton-Ashley thing was not played up on television as strong of a reaction. It was just more of a... Nilton kind of shrugged it off, even.
I mean, who knows what he's... Nilton didn't seem like a...
Vindictive?
He's a very loyal guy, so for him to be kind of casual about it, I don't know. It's, again, I'm annoyed that I have an opinion on this, you know? It's like not why I watch the show, but hey, here we are.
All right, next... From this week's challenge, Huey, I cannot believe this guy has lasted this long. He should have been the first one sent home. I thought that in week one.
I thought that he really had a moment last week at the challenge. They were the first ones to go, right, where they had to jump off the cliff and into the water.
Yeah, and he vomits and then jumps, yeah.
Him ralphing everywhere was so funny. And Ashley, again, back to Ashley. Ashley, the one thing I'll say about her is she is game for these crazy things that they make them do. She doesn't have, you know, some of these folks come on and they're just like ripped muscles and clearly athletic. She doesn't really have that kind of vibe, but she is tough physically and mentally. She didn't think twice about jumping off. She was in tears laughing at Huey puking everywhere. But to Huey's credit, he jumped. When the whistle went, he jumped.
I didn't see that coming.
I didn't either. I thought they're setting up a TJ berating, which is not what went down. But Huey had a moment that I think kind of set up the elimination, and I realized it during the elimination, is when he's with CT in that little workout room. Mm-hmm. And CT is kind of, he's been there so long, and they're all like, I mean, they even joked about that in the episode with, I guess, is it Emmanuel, the guy with all the tattoos? Something about...
Who's become quite fun.
He is funny. He said, CT, I'm coming for you. And then he like paused and said, no, really. I'm not. Please leave me alone. I have no ill intent. They all seem afraid of him. So anybody that CT kind of takes a shine to and they put it on screen, I think they're setting something up. You know, they're not subtle with this editing if you watch enough of these seasons. So the fact that CT says he may surprise some people and that Huey's in elimination 45 minutes later, chances are decent that Huey's probably going to do well in the elimination. And he, you know, it was a gutsy performance. I thought I really liked the eliminations this year. They seem to, for a few seasons, be very size-based. Lucky for Fessy, that's when he came on the show. I mean, he's only had two hall brawls and a pole wrestle with Jordan, who is an incredible competitor, but is at an obvious disadvantage because of, you know, one hand not being fully formed. So now seeing some of these guys like Kells go home, Corey L, another big dude, taken out by these kind of, these scale balancing eliminations, I'm for it. This one was a lot of try hard and a lot of communication and things that make for good TV.
I really thought that Huey had dropped the ball when he dropped the key. It was a total face plant moment where, it probably had a lot to do with the editing, but I was just thinking, They're going to lose this after he talks so much shit during elimination, during the actual competition.
I don't ever remember anybody talking that much shit during an elimination.
Me either.
Like, while it's still happening, maybe between, you know, if it's like a pole wrestle and they're taking a break and they're about to go again, maybe, but not while something's going on. That was funny. I think it's a lot to do with the editing. They made it seem maybe a little bit more dramatic than it was. Amber fortunately kept them together. I definitely realized when Fessy said her name how much of an Amber fan I am. And I knew I was from last season, but I was, you know, sometimes you don't, it's like watching a football game that you don't really care about until somebody scores a touchdown. And then it kind of galvanizes who you're for. Kind of had that moment with her this week.
Well, let's talk about her. I was glad that she's on the docket here.
I mean, I'll add one more thing about the elimination before we go on. And the other thing, once the elimination was over, all of the shit talking that Huey had done, I thought that Coryell's confessional, I can't remember if it was back at the house or, you know, standing there when he kind of said, I have judged Huey in a way that I have fought my whole life to not be judged. I thought, you know, there are moments on this show where, especially with the more eloquent cast members, which Coryell is definitely one of, I hope he comes back, him articulating that, I thought was moving.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. It was touching. As a gay man, they both are gay men, and he was talking about how that's exactly what they try not to do. They did the exact, he did the exact same thing. And just to have that self-actualization, that was nice.
I think that's what, when reality TV is good, that's what, aside from the things that we like about the challenge, the insanity and the physical competitions and all of that, these moments of, you know, we talked about this with the first season of Real World when they went back to the house. Like, that's one of those kind of moments where, you know, you're seeing an actual human reaction to something, which I thought was great.
So you were bringing up Amber B. I'll circle back around to her. Was she double-crossed or should she have seen it?
I think because of the Veteran Alliance, and you were saying for weeks in the column that Fessy's going to be the one to mess it up. Who's going to fire the first shot, if you will? And it was Fessy. That was, I think, because of who her partner was, because they're so tight, meaning Josh and Fessy, maybe she thought, well, a few more weeks at least before this breaks down. But dumb move, awfully dumb move on Fessy's part. I mean, he just, I don't see how he goes much longer without a truly huge target on his back. If not, you know, they cut it off before they go back to the house. I feel like this was a setup episode because they're going to corral all of them onto a bus and send them back to a house where I assume alcohol will probably be available. And so something good is going to happen for us as viewers.
AMC does this thing with The Walking Dead on every Sunday evening where you watch the episode and at the very end they say, if you want to immediately watch next week's episode, you can subscribe to AMC Plus. And I was thinking, man, if there was an MTV Plus, I would chalk up $5 right now and watch that next episode. Okay, last thing I want to ask you about it. Fessy versus Josh breakdown. We touched on it in the column, but
I thought it was going to get genuinely physical.
Yes, me too.
I think it still could. I thought it was going to happen in that moment, though, because, you know, it took security a while to get over there. Most of the time, if they know that they're going to be in, like, a hotbed kind of bar environment or whatever, they're kind of ready to step in. But I thought, you know, there could be a few blows here before it gets broken up. This would be great. And TJ reacted very strongly to Coryell just shoving Huey, which that used to be par for the course on the show. So they're playing with fire this year. If, I mean, Josh is not going to let it go. He's so one-track minded.
And emotional.
Yeah. But I thought that could be it. When I saw Corey step between them, I thought, well, he can probably keep it under control. Let him fight, man. Just get out of the way. Let's get one of these guys out of here.
Gonna be good. Next week should be good stuff. We might have to bring it up again next week. Donovan, I'm gonna rope you in because you and I are big fans of what we do in the shadows. I'm gonna kind of pull an Adam here where I didn't realize how much I loved this show until I watched the season premiere of the third season this week. So we'll talk a bit about it. It's back again on FXX and Hulu. I think you can watch them on both of those. In case you don't know, it's a spinoff on the fake documentary movie, What We Do in the Shadows. That was who stars in it?
It's Jermaine Clements and Taika Waititi, and then there's another guy whose name I can't remember.
Right, and so it's not about them. The fake documentary is, the premise is they're filming, these humans are getting a chance to make a documentary on vampirism and real vampires. And so the show is based in Staten Island. So it's a different locale, but same universe. And you do, and the great news is you do not have to watch the movie, which I have never seen. You do not have to watch the movie to watch the show.
Although if you like the show, you'll almost certainly like the movie.
Right, I've just got to cut it. I've got to carve out time to watch the movie. And also, I don't think it's streaming anywhere. It was my last issue when I wanted to watch it. But I'm definitely game.
Yeah, it goes on enough. Yep.
I'm game for it. But anyway, that's your premise in case you don't know. But if you, you know, if you've lasted this far to our podcast, you'd know. And it does such a wonderful job of taking the banal and hilarious and just mixing them. Like, who knew being a vampire is just a lot of sitting around and arguing? So great at that. I love the show. Donovan, can you say to our listeners what you love about it?
Jeez, I think you summed up a whole bunch of it. I honestly, the season three premiere kind of wrapped up a lot of stuff that I really like about the show. I think they really have a pretty good sense of all their characters now, which is great. Mm-hmm. So each one is individual, each one sounds different, you know, when they're fighting, each one, that's funny. But the you said kind of the mix of like the banal with like, these guys are vampires, right? They're
all buffoons.
They're lords buffoons of the dark, and they're completely incompetent, and they have no idea about it. That's what I loved it when they made it very when Guillermo's in his cell, and he's like, they can't even lock me up, and he's been cleaning the house for them, and they just have no idea.
Yeah, that's one of the. I only watched the one episode. There are two, though, and which I plan on diving into very soon. To me, it's also, you talked about that they know their characters, and that's a comedy thing where it takes a few episodes to get that particular ball rolling, and they've sharpened their knives on this one. It's perfect. I find it so well-written, and not just well-written to say it's funny and humorous, because it is, but it's also a show that has a character use the word lickspittle in the first episode and use it absolutely perfectly, and also in a way that's very funny. And Adam, I know Adam doesn't watch it, but and he may have heard us talk about it, but it's got a one of the vampires for the television show, which is not in the movie from what I understand, is an energy vampire. So it's just a guy who's just he's not really a, I mean, he's a vampire, but he's just boring. That's his thing. He just sucks the energy out of the room. And that's his, you know, persona, really.
There was a bit where they've really started to get, like, when Colin Robinson is good, Colin Robinson is really good. He just when they're walking down the stairs, he's just like, it's like, where did my weekend go? Am I right? It's like, yeah.
His obsession with Guillermo's poop bucket killed me. Like, the vampires were all, should we kill this guy? He may have betrayed us. He may have not betrayed us. And Colin Robinson, the energy vampire, is just over there going, what about the poop bucket? Is it empty, half empty, liquid? Are there Lincoln Longs in it I need to go check out?
Hilarious. He's looking for messages. He wants to make sure he's not communicating with the outside.
And if this doesn't sell anyone, the best example of top-notch joke writing is when a vampire appears and she's bringing a message from other vampires, and she says, do you have a VCR? And one of the vampire's response is, how are you spelling that? He says, V-C-R. That's just top-notch.
It was that was another highlight.
Do you have a VCR? How do you spell that? But yeah, they're buffoons. It's so good. And I love it when comedy messes with tropes yet still manages to stay within the trope. It's really hard, I think.
And there's, you know, they do this kind of, I don't know, like sometimes they, balancing act is not the right word, but sometimes they kind of wink at you and they let you know, like, no, actually, this is all really sad.
And these guys. What moments could you label as that?
Well, just a couple. Maybe not in this episode so much. Where this is more about they're just more delusional. But especially some of the stuff last season with Guillermo and Nandor. There's this element that of like these guys are like, you know, they're what, thousands of years old, but they're still emotionally stunted, and they just keep doing the same old thing that they always do out of force of habit, and they don't really know how to connect with other people. And I think that's kind of a fun thing that they, it's not in there so that it beats you over the head, but there is an element of like, there's something a little hellish about it because they just do the same thing over and over and over and over.
It's a good comment on the political system. Just because you give somebody a power doesn't mean they're not a buffoon anymore, right?
You know, something, we've mentioned the writing, but the actors are all so good too. The writers have figured out how to write for the actors. Mm-hmm. And the actors are clearly very comfortable with each other and seem to be having a lot of fun as they do this. It's all a joy. They're all great.
It makes it a good hang as well. They do this other thing that I like when comedies do this is when they have a little bit of a narrative through line through the first episode all the way to the end. And, you know, they can veer away from it as needed or they could continue it. And it's usually about Guillermo in this. Like, is he, first season was like, you know, will he become a vampire? Is he going to stay there familiar? And the second season, a little bit more of that. And the third season is going to be just a little bit more of that. Except now he's got this ability, you know, so
I love seeing
what kind of mystical being they're going to bring out again.
I've really enjoyed Guillermo's storyline too, where he has gone from a punching bag to in another show he'd be the hero.
Well,
and he's kind of the hero of the show.
Isn't it rumored that this season will bring werewolves?
That's the rumor.
Oh,
we'll
wait.
See.
Oh,
because they were a big part of the original movie, right? So everyone's kind of been wanting.
Oh, I didn't see it. I've got to go watch the original movie.
The original movie's good, yeah.
Well, I can't recommend the show enough. It's fun. Just lots of fun. Really good. Just 25 minutes of hanging out is what it is. Well, that's what we got for this week. We'll cover some of the same topics again next week because it'll be all new to us once again. And we hope to hear from you all. Hit us up online. Talk to us. And we'll be in your ears again next Tuesday. See you later.